We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Your family has owned the Oscar and Sweet House for how long?
My mom and dad purchased that home in 1958. So I guess we're coming upon maybe 60, 61 years. We've been living at 2905 Garland.
What was it like growing up there, knowing the history behind that house?
Well, I just had a regular childhood. You know, it wasn't anything that was out of the ordinary. We did what most kids did. In the summertime as well as in the wintertime, we played in the park. In the park, we played in the middle of the street. When the snow came down, we shoveled snow just like everybody else. But one thing that was definitely unique was that history was our landlord. And when history is your landlord, you're required to make yourself accessible and available to those who would want to appreciate that and understand the dynamics of what happened on that corner on September 8th and 9th of 1925.
And talk about that clash that Dr. Sweet had with the neighbors.
Well, I think what you have to really do is kind of take a look at what was going on in the city of Detroit back in 1925. As you probably are aware, Henry Ford had began the $2 a day job for those individuals who were interested in working in the factories. And what happened was it kind of spurred the first Great Migration. When folk think about the Great Migration, they always think about African Americans moving from the South, coming to the North, to the Promised Land, if you will. But it was more than that. It was African Americans as well as poor whites who moved from the South, and Eastern Europeans who came over to the United States to pursue the promise of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So when you look at Detroit, you know, it was a mixture of experience. It was a mixture of paradigms, and it created a perfect storm for social issues. That's right. So that year, a member of the Ku Klux Klan almost became elected as the mayor of the city of Detroit. The only reason why he didn't was because he was a write-in candidate, and the board of canvassers threw out a great number of his votes, which made him come in second place. Otherwise, he would have won. The second thing was African Americans were heaped in this one area called Black Bottom, which is right where I-75 begins on Jefferson all the way up to Mack, bounded on the west side by John R. and east by Mount Elliott. So you had about 100,000 African Americans living in a community that could only sustain probably about 15 or 20,000 folk. So they were packed in. And then the other issue, which brought the Ocean Suite issue to a head, was the fact that when African Americans moved out of the Black Bottom trying to move into nicer areas, they were always met by a mob of angry whites. Earlier in that year, a gentleman by the name of Dr. A.L. Flesher moved on Spokane Street. He was met by a mob. A funeral home owner, Voling Bristol, moved on American Street. He was met by a mob. And then later on, a gentleman by the name of John Fletcher moved on Stoppel Street, and he was met by the mob. I believe the last time was in July of 1925 when John Fletcher moved in. It was at that point that Dr. Sweet had already purchased the house at 2905 Garland, and he made the decision that he was either going to he would rather live as die as a man as opposed to living as a coward. So in that moment, he made the decision to move on Garland and Charlevoix on September 8th. He, his wife Gladys, as well as his brother Henry and Otis, moved into the house along with five other friends. And with them, they brought guns because they knew that there was a great chance that the mob would be coming to that particular corner with the same intentions, which is to destroy the home, force them out of it, and send them back to the Black Bottom. On September 8th, when they moved in, not much occurred. But on September 9th, all hell broke loose. Sometime in the evening, the mob had assembled. Dr. Sweet looked out into the crowd, and he saw all these folk. He ran upstairs, and he kind of laid in the bed because he was just paralyzed with what he called a peculiar fear. And what shook him out of that particular state was that a rock came through the window and rested upon the bed. And at the same time, a volley of shots rang out of the house. It's recorded 15 to 20 shots rang out. When the smoke cleared, a man by the name of Leon Briner had been killed. And with that, the Detroit Police Department came in and arrested Dr. Sweet and everyone in the house and charged them with first-degree murder. The local branch of the NAACP, the president at the time was Robert Bradby. They came in and said, "Doc, we're going to do everything we can to support you in this particular endeavor." So they hired a battery of African-American attorneys. At the same time, a blurb of this issue was published in the local paper in New York. The national branch of the NAACP, which was headed at that time by James Weldon Johnson, Walter White, and W.E.B. Du Bois, they read about the article, and they thought that this was an optimal time to deal with the issues that were impacting African American as it pertains to housing discrimination. So they came to Detroit, and they met with Dr. Sweet. They met with Robert Bradby, Reverend Robert Bradby, and they came up with a new strategy. The national branch basically realized that if they were to put African-American attorneys in that courtroom to defend Dr. Sweet in front of 12 white men, they would be dead before they opened their mouth. So they did a national search. The national search rested upon a gentleman by the name of Clarence Darrow. Clarence Darrow was the Johnny Cochran, if you will, of his day. He was the attorney of the underdog. He had just finished the Scopes monkey trial, which dealt with the theory of evolution. And they met with him in New York. And they stated the case to Clarence Darrow, and Darrow asked the question, "Well, did he actually fire into the mob?" And they kind of talked around that question because they wanted him to take the case, so they didn't know exactly where he was going with that. So later on in the conversation, he asked the question again, "Did the Sweets fire into the mob?" And they reluctantly or hesitantly said, "Yes, he did." He said, "Then I'll take the case, because a man who isn't willing to defend himself, his family, and his home is not worthy of defending." So in October of that year, Darrow came to Detroit with the one purpose of defending the Sweets. And he based his entire case on a man's home as his castle. The interesting thing is that when this case came about, no judge wanted to deal with it, not one judge, with the exception of one young, aspiring Irish cat by the name of Frank Murphy. Frank Murphy, Hall of Justice, Frank Murphy, Mayor of the City of Detroit, Frank Murphy, Governor of Michigan, Frank Murphy, Supreme Court Justice. He took the case, and in October, the prosecution and the defense brought up a volley of witnesses to articulate their particular position. The case turned when Darrow decided to put Dr. Sweet on the witness stand. And he said to Sweet, "What were you thinking when you saw the mob?" And Sweet said, "When I opened the door and I saw the mob, I realized that I was facing the same mob that had hounded my people throughout its entire history." in my mind, I was pretty confident of what I was up against. I had my back against the wall. I was filled with a peculiar fear, the fear of one who knows the history of my race. I know what mobs had done to my people before. And with that, he gave a full dissertation of the African-American experience since being here in the United States, about the lynching, about the racism, about even the experience that he had as a young man in Bartow, Florida, on one evening where he saw a man not only lynched, but he was burned. So it was at that moment that Clarence Darrow had the opportunity to allow for that all-white male jury to look at the world through black eyes. And they saw very clearly what was going on the corner of Garland and Charlevoix on September 8th. They saw it from a black perspective. And with that, both the prosecution and the defense rest their case. After a couple of days, the jury came back without a verdict. And as a result, Frank Murphy decided to rule that it was a mistrial, and the suites were free and relieved to go back home. Later on, in the following year, Henry would be retried because he was one of the individuals who actually stated that he fired into the mob. So again, they retried the case. Clarence Darrow based his whole case on the same standard. And this time, after the defense and the prosecution rested, the jury came back with a unanimous decision of not guilty. So that's the house that I grew up in on Garland and Charlevoix, and it was definitely an honor to be raised in that home. I'm so grateful that my mother and father not only purchased that house, but they understood the weight of the history that existed. They understood the shoulders that they stood on. They understood all of the dynamics associated with the civil rights movement, and understood that they were living in a historical home and that it was important to preserve that legacy.
And as it relates to the house, there is a project underway now that was announced back in the summer. Talk about that project and where it stands at this point.
Well, right now, this summer, I have to first state that in 2016, on Good Friday, I had an opportunity to have a conversation with Mayor Mike Duggan. I had just come home from Montgomery, Alabama, and he asked me a question. He said that my family still owned the home on Garland and Charlevoix. I said, yes, they did. He said, well, I'd like to work with you to see whether or not we can get some grant money in over there to preserve the home. And sure enough, he sent Melvin Butch Hollowell, who was at that time Corporation Counsel for the City of Detroit, to interview me to find out whether or not we were interested, and to make sure that when they filled out the grant application, we were partnering in with that particular process. So that year, the administration submitted the grant to the National Park Services, and probably in the middle of 2017, we got a notice from the National Park Services that they decided to give the money to another project that was going on in Chicago. Talked to the mayor. He said, we're going to resubmit it. We're going to keep pushing this thing until we get it done. So that year, Butch resubmitted the grant application, and probably right around May of 2018, last year, I was sitting in my driveway, and I got a text message from Butch, and he said, Dan, we were awarded the grant. We got $500,000, not only to restore the Dr. Sweet house, but also the homes adjacent to Dr. Ossian Sweet's house. Those homes were a part of the entire case. Leon Briner was at one of those homes, as well as a gentleman who was shot in the leg by the name of Eric Hoffberg. He was at the other home. So they represented the fullness of the case that occurred in 1925. So in August of last year, the mayor, along with Melvin Butch Hollowell, along with Reverend Wendell Anthony, met at the front of the house. We had a press conference, and we were able to announce that the city of Detroit was awarded the $500,000 grant in order to restore the Ocean Suite house. But the objective is to actually expand the development and create the Ocean Suite Historical District on the southeast side of the city of Detroit.
And that would include the area across the street?
The area across the street. It would be that entire area on the southeast side, probably all the way up to St. Jean, south by Jefferson and north by, I believe, Mac, and then west probably by Cadillac Street.
That's a major deal.
That's a major deal. And the objective is to spur interest in the community. If you go over there now, it's definitely not the neighborhood that I grew up as a child, but it has so much value, so much richness, and so much potential. So hopefully with this particular endeavor, it will draw interest in the community to redevelop that particular area of the city of Detroit.
Did you often get people just, like, on your doorstep saying they want to know more about the history of this house?
Yes. All the time. I remember back in 2004, the National Black Attorneys Association had a their convention here in the city of Detroit, and they featured the Ocean Suite House. In June of 2004, that's when we received the national marker as well as the state marker and placed it on the home and in the yard. And we had a big celebration on that particular day. Probably more than 300 people were there to honor that moment and to honor the legacy that Dr. Sweet left at 2905 Garland. And every day, practically in the summer, somebody stops by to read the marker. Monthly, a tour group will stop by to visit the home to understand the dynamics that occurred there on September 8th and 9th.
Who still lives in the home?
I live there. I live there. I stay there. And right now, what we're doing is we're getting it ready so that the preparation can start probably sometime this summer or this in the spring. The city inspectors will come out and do an assessment on the structure of the suite house and the two homes adjacent from it to determine what type of work needs to be done.
In are addition, those two homes occupied?
No, those two homes are no longer occupied. So they'll make a determination on what type of repair needs to be done to those particular homes. Once they do that, they'll put together an RFQ so that the project can go out for bid so that the work can commence. So we're excited about that. We're looking forward to it.
Yeah, you're beaming right now. And let's go back to when you said when history is your landlord, you feel certain obligation. That was one of the things that I was thinking as I prepared to interview you, having an older house myself, but no, you know, 1921, built in 21. I just feel the sense to, you know, preserve it, the house, just because, you know, it's been standing for so long, almost a century. And then you have this home with all this historical significance, the civil rights case. It has to almost be almost like a burden, maybe. Was it a seemed like a burden at some point that you had to preserve it?
No, it's never been a burden. it's been a labor of love. It's been a passion. While I received my bachelor's degree from the University of Detroit Mercy in political science, they had a program there where you could get a certificate in Africana Studies. So I obtained that certificate because I really love and I'm really passionate about my history, my story. I love the story about Dr. Ossian Sweet. I love the story about Frederick Douglass, Denmark Vesey, George the Baptiste, Dr. Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, Marcus Garvey, Sojourner Truth, all of those people who were here before me, whose shoulders we stand on, because in that we find our own identity. We find our own strength. We're inspired because of their conditions and how they were able to transcend those particular circumstances, how they were courageous enough to fight a racist and bigoted system in order that we might be able to embrace the promises of America. America is the great melting pot. That's the notion. Whether you're white, black, Latino, Hispanic, Asian, you should be able to pursue the promise that was identified in the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, among these being life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. All of us have an opportunity to engage and be enriched by the promise of America. And America becomes great, and it aspires to that particular promise where every person has an opportunity to embrace that axiom. And in order to do that, you know, we had to have Frederick Douglass. We had to have Sojourner Truth. We had to have all of those individuals who were willing to sacrifice life and limb and passion in order for America to be the great nation that it is at this particular time. So, yes, it's a labor of love because I'm inspired by all of those people.
All right. Anything else you want to add?
Happy African-American History Month.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.